This episode of The Multiverse is recorded on Sunday, December 12th, 2010, and is a proud product of Vagary TV. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 33 of The Multiverse. This is a very special episode, and I'm happy you guys can be with us. Y'all know me, I'm Chris from GameByNight.com. We have two special guest hosts with us today. Jeremy from MMO Voices, please say hello, my friend.
Hello, I am special.
He's a special soul. And sitting to his internet left is our friend Gavin from FlexYourGeek.com. Hello, Gavin.
Hello.
Now, what the listeners probably know, but some of them may not know, is you two are actually conjoined twins on the MMO Voices podcast. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. How'd you know? We haven't had the surgery yet.
I've seen pictures. They're circulating on 4chan, guys. there's right now a gif of both of you doing some crazy, like, arm flippity flappity kind of flu type thing.
Right. I'm an itch. She's trying to scratch it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little awkward sometimes.
That's a wonderful image, guys. Well, I'm going to give you a chance to kind of talk about the things you're up to. I know you both have a lot of cool stuff you've been doing lately, but we have you both on the show today to kind of promote a new project that all three of us are working on. It's RiftWatchers.com, and of course it's about the new upcoming game from Trion Worlds, Rift, the game formerly known as Planes of Talara. Very cool game. I think we can all say that we are interested, right? We're writing a website about it?
Yes, very interested.
Very interested. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It looks like a fun game. We want to be there to give all you listeners the kind of information you're going to be looking for in the lead-up and the follow-through. And to kick us off, we are going to be doing our giveaway on that site, and we'll give you some more details on that. But suffice it to say that if you want a free VIP beta key that will get you a spot into all the fun little beta events, stay with us until the end of the show. And with that out there, Jeremy, let's go to you first. Tell us, man, what's up, what are you working on, and where can people find you?
I'm on the internet in general. Mm-hmm. No, just kidding. No, basically, I've been working with Vagary TV pretty closely. I'm the managing editor for all the writers, so I've been trying to keep all them in line, you know, and they like to give me the runaround a little bit. But no, it's actually been a lot of fun. There's been a lot of really good content coming out. I'm really proud of, you know, to be able to sit back and say, hey, I helped, you know, put this together in some way, shape, or form. So, and as the future goes forward, I mean, we had a great meeting last night about what we're going to do moving forward with the site, and I think anybody listening, you know, keep your eye on Vagary because there's some really good stuff to come.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. You've done an excellent job, you know, stirring the guys to actually keep writing and to be putting out quality stuff. I was talking to my wife last night too. I don't know how you guys were, but growing up, Ryan's the guy who started Vagary. We grew up in just a little town, and we'd sit around reading Nintendo Power magazine and just kind of be really into everything video games. You know what I mean? We'd look at these conventions and be like, oh, it'd be so cool to be able to go to these. And it was just really neat. And now that we're taking on this Vagary project, it's like we're finally getting on the other side of this stuff. You know, we have a closer relationship with developers. You know, we're writing this kind of stuff for other people to enjoy. It's really cool, man. Been very fun.
Yeah, and I agree. It's been, like I said, going forward too, I think there's going to be a lot to look forward to, especially as we get into this Rift Watchers stuff too. So, you know, double pimping the site.
Double plug. And Gavin, I want to give you a chance to talk about what you've been up to, because you have, like, the most epic news of the week, my friend. So tell everybody what's going on.
Yeah, anything I could have come up with, like, it just gets drowned out by this.
Rift Watchers, what?
For those who know me, I've been running FlexYourGeek.com for a while now and been writing all over the place. Well, one of the listeners to the FYG and MMOV podcast sent me a message and said, hey, guess what? PC Gamer is looking for some MMO writer. And I was like, oh, that's sweet. He's like, you should go for it. So I was like, what the hell, you know, I'm not going to lose anything by sending in some samples. The worst that will happen is I won't hear from them. So I sent in 3 samples, and the next day they sent me an email back and said, we really like your stuff. Do another sample for us on a recent patch or expansion or da-da-da-da, and put it in a style that fits with our magazine's overall voice. And I was like, oh, that's no problem. They're pretty easy. Their writing isn't easy. It's just easy for me to adapt my voice to other people's styles. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, well, I could write about Cataclysm. I could write about all these other patches. But what stuck out to me as something different was Maple Story's new Big Bang. So I wrote a 300 article on Maple Story, 300 word article, and sent it in. And the next day they sent it back and said they liked it so much that we're going to work with it for the next issue, and gave me the job. So now a writer for PC Gamer.
Yeah, that is awesome. And they're one of the, at least the country's biggest gaming magazines out there. So big congratulations.
Yeah,
and I bet you the fact that you wrote about Maple Story really made you stand out, because anyone else that applied, you know, they're writing about WoW. You know, yeah. So you took that different approach. So that's really great.
Yeah, I thought about that going in. I was like, there's so much stuff about Cataclysm has been the last month. I bet it'd be refreshing for somebody to write about a cute anime-based MMO instead. So I did, and it was pretty funny.
Well, when can people expect to see your stuff on their site?
You know, I don't exactly know for sure. I know that we're working on that article for the next issue, is what they said to me. So that could be magazine, that could be the web issue, but
awesome.
We're talking and filling out all the paperwork next week. So,
wow, well that's great. Well, let us know when that's going to be in there, because we definitely want to point people over there so they can check it out.
Yeah, I will do.
All right, awesome, guys. Well, for the regular listeners of this show, they're probably feeling a little bit off, because right now it's 2/3 MMO Voices podcast and 1/3 multiverse. But so just as a brief explanation, we were going to record last night and Rickness was going to be here with us. But we had a last minute change in plans. So we let Rickness, you know, have the Sunday to himself. He is an enterprising young man. And we want to give him every opportunity to hang out with his buddies and be 18 years old. So he's out there doing that. And Adam is probably trying to repair his stubs
liver.
For fingers, right? Yeah. I was going to say stubs for fingers, but liver is probably part of that, because with as much as they're working him, he's had to hit the sauce a little bit. He's had to. He has a pretty hardcore job, too, so it might put some people in danger. So good for Adam. He's living the high life at everyone else's expense. But he'll be back on soon. Anyways, but for today, I think we have a good crew, guys. So let's get into the news.
I don't know about that.
I want to be part of the twins, guys. Let's be conjoined triplets.
Menage a trois, have you?
I think I have some room next to my ass.
Oh, you're such a... Oh my god. Gavin, ladies and gentlemen.
This is just payback. All I'll say is for episode 37, this is just payback.
Yeah, well, I like the fact that on that episode of your show, it's now officially dubbed the Testosticast. At least we got something out of that, right?
And it is our, by the way, it is our most downloaded episode of all time at this point. Thank you.
Really? Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. People are just like, let's go and hear these guys do something they'll regret. There you going. Oh, man. Well, hopefully we don't take it that far, but I think we'll have fun. First topic in the news, and perhaps the only topic, because I don't really feel like talking about Cataclysm. We hit on that. Everybody's hit on that.
Yeah.
But it came out, I think it was yesterday, about Final Fantasy XIV. They are in rough shape, guys. They're going through a big management overhaul, and what was most notable to me is they're pretty much the face of Final Fantasy XIV, Hiromichi Tanaka, stepped down and apologized for the state of the game. Jeremy, I hear you over there. What do you make of all this? I mean,
well, I think I want to say it was Thursday that I got the email. I think it was Thursday mm-hmm. night, like midnight or something like that, the email came out, which was mm-hmm. really weird time to be receiving an email from an MMO studio. But basically, first off, I have to say I really commend them. And it speaks volumes of how they feel about their customers for what they did, because Tanaka himself had this really long note that was basically just an apology to all the players saying, you know, this game has not stood up to your expectations. It has not stood up to our expectations. And for that, we apologize. We apologize that it, you know, might have felt like it was rushed. It, you know, wasn't out. It wasn't up to standard. And because of that, anybody who's bought the game, you will be playing for free until it is up to our standards.
Which is amazing if you think about it. Well, on one hand, like, you have to look at that and be kind of pumped about the ability to play a game for free, because it has its issues, but it is a AAA game, right? I mean, it's polished. It's not like one of these just bargain bin MMOs that'll shut down in a year, hopefully.
Oh, no, not at all. And that's the thing. Like, in my opinion, it's actually a very well-done game. It's just not... It has not turned out the way that they expected, and has not turned out the way the players have expected at this point, and they recognize that, and they're taking action. And, like I said, that really pumps up their customer service in my eyes, and this their dedication to the fans of the game, because they want to make the game that everybody wants. And because they haven't done that yet, they are saying, keep playing the game as it is, or try it again in a month if you want, but your account's still active and we're not charging you.
That's about the biggest saving face move they could have done, is to let people play for free. I mean, it doesn't necessarily take advantage of all the free-to-play hype out there, but it does kind of, I mean, not to the fullest extent, I mean, but it does leverage people's excitement for trying things without having to pay for them. And I think it'll keep more people playing for longer that would have given up after the first month. The question I have to ask, though, is when they do get this thing resolved, I mean, how long does it take to majorly overhaul an MMO? You know, are we talking 3 months, 6 months, a year? And after all that's done, are people going to be willing to pay for it once they've had it for free for that long? You know, and that's a big question, I think.
That's a really good question. And then you have to wonder at that point, are they going to just go cash shop? Which I don't think so, because I think a lot of the Final Fantasy fans would probably have a coronary.
I think so, too. And they would take on the Eastern model, I think, because Square Enix is a Japanese company. I mean, they have the North American unit, but pretty much everything they produce has that kind of Eastern flavor. And there is a big distinction. And Gavin, maybe you can comment on this, because you've played a lot of free-to-play games more than I have. There seems to be a distinction between Eastern cash shops and Western cash shops in their willingness to kind of sell power. I mean, is there any merit to that?
Yeah, I would say so. It's hard for me to say, because I haven't played many that are in an Eastern like realm. I've played the stuff that was meant for North America, so most of the stuff I've played has been localized. I do know that for them and the culture, it's more about the journey and working together towards a goal, and it doesn't have to have necessarily as many quests. And in that, like, buying power isn't a big deal, because the power is aiding your group. I mean, it's not about solo play as much over there. So here it's looked at as an advantage, like, or too much of an advantage, because we are a nation of single players.
Yeah, so, that's true.
So I think it will be interesting to see if they end up going that model. I think that it's a definite possibility, just because of the point you mentioned, that, you know, people are getting it for free for so long that suddenly, once it's good enough, do they really want to start paying, you know, the $15 a month?
Yeah. It's just, you know, they it would be training people, you know, like, if they're right now, there's no cash shop or anything. So you're getting a subscription game for free, which is going to spoil some people. So when they switch it up, they're going to face the hurdle of creating a cash shop that players are going to be comfortable with and able to get behind, and also convincing people, or if they don't go that route, convincing people that all of a sudden what they had for free is worth paying for, and kind of breaking them out of that mindset.
Absolutely. The power of conditioning works wonders. The game could have come out and thrown out $20 a month as their subscription. People would have been reluctant and paid for it. But because they've been getting it free for so long, suddenly being charged $15 a month will have a bigger backlash than being, you know, charged $20 originally.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting how that psychology works, but it's true. It happens.
I would agree. Well, are we all in agreement that we think the game is going to stay around, though? Because there are people out there that are heralding this as the doom of Final Fantasy XIV. Personally, I don't see it that way. It's not a good sign, but Square Enix, I just don't see them shutting this thing down before it gets a real chance to try to make back some of the losses. Where do you guys fall on that?
Well,
I've said this before in other on the MMO Voices podcast about how I feel about people talking about this, and it's basically a game is not doomed until it shuts its doors. Because, you know, people will see, like, a server merger in a game, like, oh, well, that game's dead. Really? Because I thought there were still, like, 100-something thousand, 200,000 people playing it. That's not dead to me.
Yeah. You know,
until they have to close their doors because it's not paying the bills anymore, the game is not dead. And, you know, with a game like Final Fantasy, it could be the worst MMO ever released in history, and it's Final Fantasy. It's not going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm with you on that.
And I would have to put up the point of think of the worst two, in this case, free-to-play games in terms of press in the last year. You got Algonon and you have Lods, and both of those are still running strong. So, I mean, people were heralding their doom long before before they are where they're at now. And
there's much smaller companies behind those, too. Yeah, I mean, Square Enix is a beast. The fact that they can let this game, after so much development cost, let people play it for free is a testament to how much financial backing that game has, you know? Mm-hmm. I see it sticking around. But see, there are the people calling us eternal optimists because they just figure this will be the next APB and all that. And I don't see a lot there. And I guess I really am an optimist because when I hear this announcement, I feel like for most MMO players, and I'll have to have a caveat because I don't really consider myself part of this group, but I think for your average MMO player, this is a very good sign because they've obviously seen that for the majority of people that came to this game, it wasn't what they wanted. So they're saying, all right, we need a whole different set of eyes on this thing. Let's go through and let's redo it. So it's probably going to be closer to people's expectations when they actually get done. That being said, I don't really think maybe a lot of the people that are playing it right now will be as happy as they're hoping about that, because, like, personally, I love the game for what it is. It's not like every other MMO. It's very different, you know? So it's really kind of a toss-up, but for the people that are so scared, I would say wait and see, because it might turn out to be something that was closer to your expectations in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the thing is that could go either way, though, that I see with this is that they brought in a huge team of people now that are from Final Fantasy XI. So it's a good game, but if they turn it into a Final Fantasy XI clone, so to speak, I don't know how many people would stick around because they still have Final Fantasy XI they could play.
Yeah.
And it probably runs smoother.
I keep hearing that it is already a Final Fantasy XI clone. So
I've heard that too.
I don't think it's going to hurt it that much.
I tend to disagree with that, though. I mean, yeah, there's a couple things that are like that, but for the most part, no.
Well, I know their flagship feature, their class system, is different, and that's something that I really hope they retain because that's one of the coolest parts of the game. You know, like how you can mix and match your abilities from all the different classes they have.
Yeah, well, that is different, but it's different, but it is similar on the same thing, because in Final Fantasy XI, you could train up multiple, multiple professions, but it didn't work with the same mechanic that they're using now in 14. Mm. So they're different, and the way that they get to the same point is different, but that's what I hear, is that the end result and what you're attaining is the exact same thing that you're working for in Final Fantasy XI. They made the mechanics and the path you take to get there, which, you know, is a lot to say, saying that's different, but I haven't played the game myself, so take my thing with a grain of salt.
Well, that's my thing, too. I have to go so much by what other people say about Final Fantasy XI, so when they say, oh, it's so much like it, I'm like, okay, if you played it, you must know. So, I mean, but
you can't in Final Fantasy XI, though. I mean, a Beastmaster can go a couple, you know, zones lower in solo, but for the most part, I mean, it's, you have to have a group.
Well, let's hope they recognize that much, though, that the fact that you can solo in 14 is one of the biggest selling points about it in comparison to 11. You know, there's a lot of people, like Gavin had mentioned, you know, we're soloers here in the West, so when it comes down to being able to go through up to the end cap, at least the most of the way on your own, that's an expectation in MMOs these days, so let's hope they don't change that too much.
Yeah, I don't think they will. I mean, I think they're going to kind of stick with the way it is now. I'm just hoping they polish it a little bit more and then really meet what, you know, everybody expects the game to be like.
Yeah, and whoever decided that it was okay to release the game in the performance situation it was in, I hope they're one of the people that was moved off, and they have some people that are working there, because the game is beautiful, don't get me wrong, but it way underperforms for how beautiful it actually is. I mean, I was lucky to get 20 frames a second, and I don't have, you know, my computer's new within, you know, a year and a half with some decent stuff, so I was very disappointed about the frame rate, so... Hopefully. But anyways, we'll have to keep an eye on that and see what happens. But try not to be doom callers, ladies and gentlemen, because I really don't think that's what's going to come. At very least, the game will be out there for a year, right? So if you buy a box and you can get a year's worth of enjoyment, pretty good investment, especially compared to a single-player game. So we will see what happens. And with that, let's get into the main portion of our show. Let's talk about Rift, guys, because we love Rift, and we're all rifted, and yeah. And Vagary is now the proud owner of the RiftMe domain, which I just thought that was kind of funny. We got Rift.me, and when Ryan sent that, it's a good domain, but I'm... That just sounds kind of dirty, doesn't it? Maybe that's just me. I don't know.
Rift me.
Well, it reminds me too much of Shaft Me, and it just sounds bad, you know what I'm saying? But I don't know. That's just where my mind goes with the FT. And anyways, we'll do something there. But I figure there's a lot of people, and up until a while ago, I was right in this camp too, there was a lot of people that look at Rift, and they see a game that's just another fantasy MMO. There's not a whole lot that's different about it. And yet, the people that are fans, they tend to get really excited, and we're all among those. So I wanted to break down the individual parts, kind of explain what it's about, and where the appeal is, and just kind of have discussion based about what Rift is. So the first point I have here is setting. So... we can't say whether or not we were in the whether we were in the beta or not, but this is all open domain, so you can find all of this on the Rift forums, actually, most of it. So let's start with the world lore. So Jeremy, who are the Guardians? Who are the Defiant? You know, what the heck is going on in the world of Rift?
Well, the two factions, are, like you said, are the Guardians and the Defiants. The Guardians are basically trying to protect the world from the Rifts, and the Defiants are basically doing the same thing in their own way. From what I've read in the comics so far, it seems like the Defiants are the reasons that the Rifts have opened in the first place. They were experimenting with the planes and a device that that was holding open a planar gateway, which basically allowed the was this Regulus? Is that his name?
Yep.
It allowed Regulus to come through and basically throw the planet into oblivion. So as you're playing Rifts, it's actually pre- and post-apocalyptic. There's basically time travel involved, and they do talk about that a little bit on the website, so I don't want to go into too much detail about what I can and can't say, but... basically, the whole plot is post-apocalyptic.
Yeah, they emphasize this whole war-torn thing, and I think it's so cool, kind of how they set this up, because we have other games that are around this basis of war. I mean, like, look at Warcraft, Alliance and the Horde, right? Here, the Guardians and the Defiant, they're separate factions, but they're both working towards the same goal, which is really different. And like how I understood it, and maybe you guys have a different understanding from what you've read, the Guardians strike me more as like the real religious, have faith in the gods, you know, we're going to do this the right, honorable way. The Defiant are more like, well, the gods, they left us anyways, so we're going to win this battle by any means necessary and screw your rules. Like, the Defiant are more the heretical kind of, we're going to mix magic and machinery and create a freaking super bomb to destroy all of you. Like, that kind of group. Is that right for how you guys understood it?
Yes, so far. And like I said, I need to go through, I have the first three issues and issue zero of the comic. And there's one more issue coming out soon that's supposed to close it all up. So I'm missing a big chunk because obviously they're saving it for the last issue.
Yeah, I need to get my hands on that because I'm just going based on the website entries, which are good. They have a lot of detail, but it's an actual story they're telling you, right, in the comics?
Yes, and exactly how Regulus came through. Because of this rift in the planes, basically, I cannot remember the guy's name because I've only read it through once. I'm going to be reading it through again. But basically, there's this guardian who's like the, you know, the guardian of guardians. I mean, everybody looks to him as a leader. His brother gets corrupted by Regulus. And there's this rift in the planes because of this device that was set up that it was talking about, that was keeping like the plane of life open, and there was basically, you know, demigods and everything protecting the device now.
Mm-hmm.
But because of this rift that's open, basically the big guardian dude finally caught up to him, confronted him, and he sacrifices himself and calls Regulus through.
Awesome. Yeah, that's very high drama.
It is, and it I was surprised how good the comic is. It's actually published by a subsidiary of DC.
Oh, cool. All right, so I got to admit, before I really started getting interested in the game, I saw the comic as kind of like how I see gaming books. It's like marketing hype. Is it more than that?
If you're into the lore, it's more than that. Cool. If you're not, no, it's marketing hype. Okay. It is, but they're actually very well done. They're very good books. So
awesome.
I was, you know, it's one of those, sometimes you see these like really crappy books for a game that's coming out, and it's just, like you said, marketing hype, and they kind of suck, but it gets the, you know, people in the comic book shops see the name and they're like, ooh, I got to check that out. It actually follows this character, Asha, who starts out as a guardian working together with the guardians, and who becomes a defiant.
Cool. We got the twisting narrative here.
So as far as I can tell so far in the comics, she's actually a good guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you look at it from the point of view of, like, the Guardians or whoever's trying to take her down now, but she's a good guy. You know, she's working for the same means, and it just shows, like, how well they wrote this lore because, you know, like I said, both these sides are fighting for the same thing, the exact same thing. But at the same time, they're fighting each other because, and as much as I hate to say it, it's very Horde Alliance because...
Well, no, actually, Jeremy, I'm glad you said that because, I mean, that distinction is there, and it's an important one, but I think what really makes the difference between this is you're dealing with two factions that are fighting for the same goal, but it's like each one feels that the other one is... If the other one wins, then it's going to mean the doom of the world. So they both have their intents on the same goal, but like right off the page here, it says... So while the Guardians run around Talara building temples, sticking their noses in everyone's business, and desperately praying for a miracle, the Defiant plan on actually delivering one. So effectively, the Defiant feel that the Guardians are going to let everybody die. And you have this post-apocalyptic world where everyone's life hangs in the balance, and it's like the setting of what would people do under that kind of circumstance. And you have these two factions, and they wind up turning against each other, even though, really, they both want the same thing. And that's such an interesting dynamic. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why post-apoc literature and stuff flourishes so much. This is about that human relationship. And
one thing I forgot to add to it too is they both sides are just assuming that because it's the other faction, they're just assuming that they're serving Regulus, so that's being used against them too.
And that's what I really like about the lore that I've read thus far, is that it doesn't seem like an issue. Its setting is in a morally gray area. You're not sure what is right, what's wrong, and it seems like a very real life conflict between the religious and the people who feel that salvation is going to come through their own means. And so both want salvation, but the paths of getting there are just a different thought process. I mean, one wants to pray and has faith, and the other, you know, wants to make their own means. And that can be, I mean, that's caused wars in real life, and that's what we're playing out in this Rifts game, which is awesome.
That's what I find so interesting about it, is, you know, it's held within these fantasy trappings and the trappings of the lore, but, I mean, you could apply that same kind of mentality that these characters have to the real world. I mean, like, I could totally picture that playing out. You would have if there was some impending doom, you know, like a comet heading towards Earth, you would have the people that would want to pray for salvation, and you would have the people that want to build a rocket to go and blow the thing up, you know? And then, I mean, if it was something more perilous, it would get closer and closer to what is happening in this story, and that's just so friggin' cool. I love it. Love it.
Yeah, they did a really great job with the lore. And like I said, I can't wait for issue number 4 because there's only so much you can get through the website right now. Yeah. And the fact that they're, you know, releasing kind of alongside, I mean, they give us a little bit more of the lore on the website after the comic's out too. So, I mean, yeah, it's going to be around. I mean, they're kind of pulling a, you know, Old Republic type thing where every week they're releasing a little bit more of something.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
I think, you know, I've played a lot of MMOs, and there's a lot of them where I just don't care about the story. There's 3 where I actually do, and that's been EverQuest 1, World of Warcraft, and now Rifts.
Yeah.
Rift.
Yeah, so this is cool stuff. Well, let's move on to a real quick topic. How do you guys feel about the art style that you're seeing in there? From the screenshots, it again features this kind of very saturated colors, kind of like this World of Warcraft-esque stylization where certain things, like it seems like armor models and stuff, are very realistic. So it's kind of a blend. So Jeremy, how are you feeling from the screenshots and video you've seen?
I really like it. I think it's a more polished style compared to, I don't want to say Warcraft's not polished, but it's its own style. It's a little bit more cartoony, and I like the Warcraft style. I'm not a person who complains about it. Like, there's a lot of people who hate the Warcraft art style. I actually like it, and I think it fits the world very well. And I can say the same thing about Rift. I think the art style fits the world perfect, just the way that it's supposed to look, and just the character models and everything, the monster models. I think it all fits in very well.
So. How about you, Gavin? How are you feeling?
Yeah, I like it. I think the thing that is impressing me from the screenshots and the videos that they've released is the vegetation that you find around. Like, they make it almost alien-like, but it's got ties with, you know, your traditional fantasy, like old kingdom type feel. But then you have these like alien like type plants sitting around or growing. And I don't know, I get the feeling of mixed worlds when I look at that. And it seems to fit with the lore really well like that.
Yeah, it's really funny you should say that because there's that, and then there's the whole kind of cyberpunk-esque thing that's going on with some of the screenshots we've seen as well. I mean, like, they mentioned time travel, so I'm sure there's going to be kind of these advanced technologies in there and stuff like that, and it seems that way. I saw a screenshot where a hologram was being projected and stuff, and it's a very interesting blend to have it tied in there, and it kind of solicits it. It kind of speaks to the sci-fi fan in me a little bit as well. It hits on both.
I absolutely agree with that. And I think most of the times when people would put this down on paper, oh, I want a fantasy game mixed with steampunk and, you know, Alien versus Predator. Let's see what that would make. And people would be like, you're fucking nuts. but I think that from what I've seen thus far, I think they're doing on the right path with it. And it looks very interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, there are certain parts of it that I really like. Like, I'm a sucker for pretty sunsets and nice atmospherics in the skies, and they really have that. Like, that's one of the reasons why I love WoW so much, is there are certain things you can look at, and it looks darn near like a painting. And there's been pictures in here, like, especially with the Plane of Life, where it's, you know, all this lush vegetation and everything, that really has that same kind of feel to it, or just real saturated colors in the sky that just makes it nice to look at, because if there's one thing I don't like, it's brown, it's bleariness, and it doesn't seem like they're highlighting that too much. I mean, you have the Plains of Death, but you also have this real colorful high fantasy kind of look at how awesome my spells look kind of vibe about it, which is just great, I think. So gameplay, this is a big one, although I bet we can go over it fairly quickly. Gameplay, they've highlighted in a few sources as being fairly traditional, you know, kill 10 rats, collect this, that, and the other thing. Is there anything about this? Let's take the other approach. People criticize it because it's been done to death. Do you think that it's going to harm the game, or how do you feel about this being the cornerstone of what Rift is, this traditional questing style? Anyone jump in.
I think it almost has to be, because that's just what people expect out of their MMOs nowadays. Mm-hmm. If you didn't have some kind of questing system, I don't know if people would really play the game.
Yeah.
And I mean, it also, you know, it feeds into projection or projection, character growth, progression. Wow, there we go. You know, that's how you raise your character's level and stats, and it fits into the lore of the world, and that's how they tell their story.
Yeah, right. I would have to agree with that. Look at all the games that have jumped out of that rut, if you want to call it that, and how they've been received. And it's generally been negative. People are claiming they want the change, but then when it comes down to put your money in your where your mouth is, they don't pay for it. So I don't blame them for going a more traditional route, and it really isn't a negative at all. I mean, these are the games that I've fallen in love with, is this type of play style, and so I'm not saying that I don't want something different someday, but as they are right now, they're fun. And so yeah. I think when the other elements of a game come together, that doesn't become the focus. When they don't come together, all you have to focus on is what you're doing, and that, you know, it brings more attention to the fact that you're grinding out quests or something like that.
That is so good that you say that. Sip had an article up. I forget the title. It was called something like Good News, The Wheel Still Works, or it was something like that, about when game companies try to reinvent the wheel, a lot of times they remove it too much from what made that wheel work in the first place. And that is so true. Like, if people really did not want that kind of questing style, would Cataclysm have done so well? Really, would WoW still be doing so well? I don't think so. I really don't. And, you know, the big MMOs out there that really have succeeded, niche games like Darkfall and Eve, not included, I would say, they tend to follow that same model. I mean, because that's a big part of what MMOs are. And, you know, I think also people feel like it's very a concise way to classify the system to say kill 10 rats, collect 10 herbs, right? But how much more can you build into that basic framework? I mean, that might be the meat and potatoes, but look at everything with Cataclysm. How much more have they done with that?
Yeah, well, I think that if they didn't do that, like, I think what you said is true. There, people are like, oh, we need something new. Well, every time somebody tries something radically different, the players shoot it down. So they want something new, but they don't want something new.
They want something slightly kind of new, but encased in that whole old-fashioned style of thing that we've always had.
The truth is that most players are after that first magical moment that they had with their first MMO. And the truth is, you're not going to get it again. It's the first MMO. It will be remembered for history as the best time in MMO history you ever had. But it doesn't have to be the only good part. And if you keep striving for that little piece, then you're not going to be able to... You're so focused on what you had and what is good that you miss out on what you could have in the future by not enjoying these things.
This is why I hate the term WoW clone that people use so much. They say anything that's even slightly the same as a WoW clone, and it gets really annoying because, you know, if you really want to boil down to it, and we kind of joked about this last night too, WoW is an EverQuest clone. It is.
Yeah.
They just
EverQuest is
it.
A mud clone.
Yeah. And, I mean, it is. Just that it was given graphics. It's a mud with graphics. And if you really want to boil it down to it, and I've said this before too, everything, all of our current RPGs, they're a D&D clone. If you really want to go back to it, they're a Dungeons & Dragons clone with graphics and a system.
I have to admit, I can't stand that term clone. It's such a bullshit excuse to classify a game. And sorry for the language, but
no problem.
I think that calling something a clone because it's similar to something else is a really derogatory way to look at a new game. And there are differences in every game that someone calls a clone. It's just that it feels similar enough that people want to just write it off as something not different. But all have something different to offer us. We just don't want to look for them because the first few steps were like, oh, I press a button to cast a spell. Oh, this is just like the last 10 games I've played.
Yeah, or it uses an action bar. It must just be like World of Warcraft. The people that call games WoW clones are people that are just jaded, people that have played WoW for probably 1,000 hours. And are upset that it won't last them forever. And I mean, you're right. It's derogatory.
It is derogatory, but the thing is we're playing MMO games. It's a genre of video games. hello, people, they're going to be similar. They're going to be clones of each other. It's not like comparing a first-person shooter to, you know, your standard
oh my gosh.
MMORPG, but, you know, you're going to have repetitious content. It's going to happen.
That's so funny you should say that. I'm thinking of Call of Duty. How many COD clones are there? If you really want to use that term and apply it to other genres.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you have a COD clone, a Battlefield clone. You could do that for everything.
It goes back to Doom and, like, Wolfenstein. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. How many Mario clones are there?
I just played a first-person shooter the other day. I could see my gun in front of me. That's such a WoW or a Doom clone. Like,
I know. Yeah. That's the point I'm making where I hate the term because, and like you guys said, they're going to be similar. No matter what, they're going to be similar. And that's what's going to make them work is because it's easy for somebody to switch from one game and go to the next. Now, now there's games that have come out like Algonon when it first launched where it looked like they took the WoW interface and copied and pasted it. And that, now that I would consider a clone. You know, I mean, it was like literally they had taken this interface and just copied and pasted it into their game, and their character models looked a little more like Warhammer, but it was like, it looked and played like World of Warcraft with Warhammer art.
Yeah.
I mean,
no, and that one I would agree. Like, when people say a game is a WoW clone because it has action bars, that's ridiculous. But when the skin they use for it literally looks like a copy and paste job, then I think it could be considered a clone because it's a copy and paste job. Like, literally, that's cloning. So, you know? But what people are not including here, are not factoring in when they look at Rift and say, oh, it's just another one of these. It doesn't stand out. What you had mentioned about it being familiar and making that the big selling point is huge. That, I mean, that will be what makes this a game people can latch onto, is because what they expect to be there presumably is going to be there. I mean, right down to the sparkles over loot. And then from that point, I mean, if that's their base, they can go on and form incremental updates, which it sounds like they're going to do with their Rift system and their dynamic content systems they've been talking about so much. Let's go on to that.
Scott Hartzman, you know, there's a lot of stuff we can't talk about, but Scott Hartzman released a statement on their website about the stuff that they learned after the first beta weekend, and that was the way that the Rift system works. And they're actually, I mean, what they've already said is going to happen is the longer they're open, the more it changes the world around them, and the more the objections change, or objectives change. So,
yeah,
I'm looking forward to seeing that, and I guess I didn't get to play towards the end of the weekend because of work. And like I said, played it all, sorry. I've been hearing different things on that too about whether you can or can't say you're in beta.
For safety's sake, hypothetically, if you were in, you wouldn't have been beta.
But from what Scott Hartzman said, they changed it towards the end of the weekend, so that they purposely sped it up so people could see how it worked.
And it's neat that they're talking about Rifts and how those work, because they actually had a change. Because when Rift first came out, they were talking about how it wouldn't have a lasting impact, or it would be possible for players to ignore Rifts if they chose to. Like, effectively, you wouldn't be forced to go in and compete in a Rift. But I guess they've changed that, because I saw that interview and I did a little digging past that. Now, I guess if those Rifts stay open long enough, they'll develop the footholds, but they'll actually go through and they'll kill quest givers and they'll destroy townships and stuff, so where if you don't fight them back, it'll just get harder and harder and harder.
Well, I heard that actually months ago, because what could possibly happen is, if people aren't traveling through some of the older zones, let's say they're starting to get a little less populated, it can have an everlasting negative impact on the world, because a rift could open up. And if it does, it could completely obliterate that zone. So what now you have to do is you have to form a raid party or so and go in there and close up the rift, basically. Because if you don't, nobody will be able to go through that zone, because it's just overrun with these creatures coming out of the rifts.
And, you know, for those people out there that may not be familiar with the concept of a Rift, right? The concept is you have your standard questing game, and then Rifts come along. They open up periodically, and mobs will come out. And the longer they're open, more mobs will come out. They'll rush and everything, and you have to fight them back. And they have a reward system in place where the more you contribute and the more you help close this Rift, you get a reward. So the way I figure it must work is if you have a raid and you go and fight this back, this could be like a supplement to the end game they have, which is traditional dungeons, raiding kind of thing, where, you know, you might go and fight a raid and get your rewards from that by doing it in the open world, which I think could really come out and make some interesting encounters, right? Because it's, you know, PvP, so if you're on a server where there's a giant raid rift that you have to go and fight. All of a sudden, you can have two factions going in there battling to get to that last boss, a la Ion, which I think was just a cool idea that they didn't really fully realize in that game,
and
which they might do here.
I think that the best way to describe this, and you can get this from the way that they've described on the website, is think of Warhammer Online's public quest system done right.
Yeah.
To where, like, it's random, and like I said, the longer it's open, the harder it gets. So technically, if you're the only one there and it just opened up, you'd be able to solo it. If it's been open for 15, 20 minutes or hours or longer, there's no way. You're going to have to get some help.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what they've said. You know, you can have one person and go and do it, or, you know, the longer you're going to have to get an actual group and everything, which is... that is kind of like the PQ system, but you're right that PQs, if you didn't have a full party to go and do it, or in some cases more than one full party, you couldn't do it. And I think what wound up happening last time I was in there is people just didn't do PQs, which was such a shame because they were such a fun thing and such an innovative feature. So honestly, if I had a post on my blog a while back where I asked that question, are Rifts just reskinned PQs? And Scott Hartzman came back in a comment and said, no, they're definitely much more than that. And even if they were just reskinned PQs with these little tweaks that we're talking about now, that would be enough, in my opinion. Well, I mean, that would be a fun system.
Well, Paul Barnett at Mythic said that, you know, there's every once in a while you'll have this idea and you get this aha moment. And he says that's when you know it passed your genius test.
Yeah.
Something that somebody should have thought of. It's so simple. They should have thought of it years ago. Nobody did. And that's what he said about public quests. Now, again, in Warhammer, from where this played it, they died off because unless there were people there to take it on, and you didn't, as long as you had like three or four groups for the final stage, you know, you were fine. Until then, you know, basically, if you were just there with one group, you couldn't do it. You would just keep dying. So people decide just, well, we're not going to do this anymore. And that's why I like the Rift system, because, you know, especially in the beginner areas, they're planned to be opening up, you know, a little here, a little there. Well, there's always going to be a few people there. And if you want, though, you can solo it. As long as you catch it when it first opens or within the first couple minutes, you could technically go in there and solo it, get some really good XP and some really good loot if you did the whole thing yourself.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and it's yet to be seen how this contribution system will work. Because they've said there will be a contribution system. They said it's really going to evaluate what you did based on your class. And I'm really interested to know how it's going to do that. That right now with the Rift system has got to be my number one concern, because they never got that right in Warhammer. They still don't have that right in Warhammer.
Well, they never fixed it. They said they fixed it, but they never fixed it. Because I tried it, and all they did was, I think, instead of, they like halved the objectives, but they didn't make anything weaker. So even though you have to kill four or like two guys in the boss instead of four guys in the boss, they're still like elite monsters or whatever they were called in that game, and you can't do it alone. It doesn't matter if there's only two. They're still going to like rape you. So
that's a hard thing to balance. Commenting on PQs, I think the major downfall to the Warhammer PQs was the fact that it was just so grindy and they couldn't be soloed. Like the first couple, maybe, but after you got up into the 10s, 20s, you couldn't complete one all the way to the final stage. And then, you know, someone would come along and, you know, finish it for you, who was more powerful. So it was just boring. You're sitting around grinding mobs for this PQ thing. And then, you know, if some group came in and had an AoE mage or something, they blast out stuff when you've been working on it for 30 minutes and they get more contribution because they did more damage. And that was the problem with War PQs. I hope that they deviate from the damage system, but it's a hard thing to balance. Do you go off of damage, then the AoE classes will do better. If you go off of tagged mobs, then the classes with the fastest skills or next to the closest spawns will randomly get it.
I hope they do it off of – actually, this is what I hope they do, is that they do it off of time spent in the Rift. And that doesn't mean sitting on the sidelines not doing anything, but time after engaging your first mob.
Yeah.
Through time to the end, and only count the time that you're actually engaging things. If you not just tag something, walk off to the edge and not do anything and get a reward, it would be contribution to the fight. Like, you know.
Well, to add on to that, I think even a better way, I mean, certainly when you're engaged with a mob, that would be something that should count towards it, but I think they should take whatever your class mechanic is and let that act as an evaluation tool. So if you're a healer, you get extra points for healing somebody that's engaged.
The way they
DPS
could do it is,
damage or threat points.
And the way they could do that is aggro list. So the second you heal somebody, you're on the mob's aggro list, even if it's at the bottom. So they know you're contributing.
Right.
Yeah, but if you go off an aggro list, any class built with an aggro reduction is going to suffer a penalty in PQs because...
No, I mean, because you will never drop off a mob's aggro list, ever. You might be at one aggro, but you won't drop off the aggro
But
list.
I think what he's saying is, like,
if you were
a DPS...
Off of the highest... The highest aggro on the list gets the most points.
Oh, no, they shouldn't do that. It should just be time. I'm saying it should be time, but the way to start the timer is getting on the aggro list. You know what I'm saying? Like, they'd have to implement a few systems, but I think that's the fairest way to work, because that way somebody doesn't walk in at the end and blow up the boss and get the most, you know.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. So a way to get your foot in the door and then use, like, a secondary system to factor in what you as your class is doing to participate.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think
cool.
That would be difficult to implement. I think it's easy to say,
would.
But I'm curious as to how hard that would be. Because there's so many, and especially with a rift system where they're talking about having multiple soul things that you can mix and match your classes, so you're not necessarily the same class as your next person who started the same way as you.
Yeah.
How do you balance that?
This is something I think that is probably going to be tweaked as they go forward, you know. But that's a good thing because they have the team that has such MMO experience. I would love to hear a collective number of how many years they have in the MMO industry for all the people working on this game. Because they have enough experience, I think, to use the data they collect and to be able to make intelligent tweaks and to really realize that what they put out at first is not going to be perfect. It'll have to be changed a lot, you know? It just seems like an incredibly convoluted system to have to design and out of necessity, right? I mean, if you really want to evaluate people's contribution with this multi-class system, that is going to be a complex system you'll have to put in unless you half-ass it. And I don't know, I don't see them half-assing it. You know, it just everything else they're doing just has a ton of polish. I think this will be something that they work on.
Yeah, I think we'll have to just see. I mean, right now, not only is there not a lot we can talk about, but we're still in the beginning stages here. So
yeah,
I hope it's something that they focus on, given the fact that the game is named after this system. They better be spending a lot of time.
Well, this system.
That's a good point.
It was released in the 70s. I mean, what? Just kidding.
Rifts were a hit it and forget it idea, guys. We're here for the end game rating. Come on. Which is another thing. They're kind of some people are excited for, some people are tired of. I kind of like the idea that when you get to the end game, you'll have heroic versions of dungeons and raids, and because that was my favorite part of WoW. You know, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. What do you think, Gavin?
You know what? I'm hoping that they do. Is they take some of the end game dungeons and instances and incorporate a rift system into those small instances so that randomly when you're running around your dungeon, maybe a rift will open up. I think that would make an awesome and dynamic experience for every new group.
Yeah, that would be incredible. Awesome. So I take it, though, you're all right with having the raid ladder end game style?
Yeah, I do enjoy raiding, and I do enjoy instances. I'm not hardcore anymore, and I don't really like the push to do that kind of stuff, but I like the option there. It's a fun thing hurdle to hop over when you get to the cap. So.
Me too. I've heard criticisms of people saying that raiding can be too exclusionary. I don't think having exclusionary raiding is necessary as something Rift will have, but even if it did, I don't think that would be such a bad thing. Like, in my opinion, raiding in the Burning Crusade gave other players something to aspire to, and I think it's one of the reasons why in Wrath now, for example, it's too early to say with Cataclysm, but in Wrath, when everyone is allowed to get in there and raid, I think burnout set in quicker for some people, because all of a sudden you lost this thing that you had to aspire to. The game had a definite end, and if there's always another branch of endgame gameplay for you to pursue. There's always another reason to log in. So in one way, I hope that raiding is easy to get into and hard to master. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that everyone will always have something to go to.
I would agree. I think that even as a more casual player now, I don't get to see all this stuff. But I think one of the detriments to World of Warcraft for me is the fact that I can reasonably access every raid. I like the fact that there's stuff out there that I have to work in order to get to. And if, as a casual player, I don't get to see that, that's fine. As long as there are options for me to do, I don't have to necessarily see every option. So, you know, give those hardcore raiders something to feel proud about. Don't bring it down to the level where they have to be compared to a casual player. But, you know, to each their own.
Yeah, I would bet, because there's so much EQ2 experience in Rift, that it will have a similar style there, which I believe is kind of up that vein, where you can get into it, there's a lot of raid options, but there's also a lot of real high-end raid options to work on, too. Jeremy, how do you feel about this?
For the endgame stuff?
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty much the standard nowadays. If they don't have some kind of raiding endgame, I think a lot of people start disappearing once they hit max level.
Yeah.
So it's pretty much a necessity, dungeons and raiding. And something I still look forward to. Like Gavin said, I don't have time for the hardcore stuff anymore, but I still enjoy it.
Yeah.
I enjoy it quite a bit. And as long as they make it more like a WoW system where, you know, you don't have to be the best, they have like a easier dungeon or something like that, or easier raids for you to get in on, or especially shorter raids, I think it will actually be very popular and will do really well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to move us on to the next and last topic, and I'm actually going to combine the two because Gavin's going to have to leave us here pretty quick. I want to talk briefly about the open class system. I'll give a rundown of that, and then let's talk a little bit about PvP. So the open class system, when you start in Rift, you'll choose an archetype. So you can be a cleric, which can have a tank or healing or DPS, mage, which of course is caster, warrior, which generally is going to be DPS or tank, and then rogue, which is your traditional rogue role. And out of those, there's different paths you can take. They refer to as souls. And you can have up to three and mix and match your abilities. So if, for example, you want to have a DPSing tank, conceivably you can do that, or a DPS with light healing, or a tank with slight healing capabilities. These are options within that without totally breaking the idea of what your original archetype is. So I don't think necessarily you can be anything, but it is one of the most customizable systems that I've seen working with the talent trees as they've shown us them. So with that, we have PvP, and they're going with the Battleground-esque style of PvP along with open world on the PvP servers. Guys, how do you feel about this class system in general? And I've just got to say, I don't see this PvP thing being balanced because of this system.
I'm curious to see how they'll balance it. Unless they even out all the abilities, it'd be almost impossible to balance PvP with the system, because every single person, and I'm sure there's going to be cookie cutter builds further down the road, whatever does the most DPS, but for the most part, every single person is going to be built different and built in their own way. Which is a good thing, because if they even that out to where it doesn't really matter what you choose, everybody's pretty equal, that will make a great well-rounded experience. But no matter what, when it comes to PvP, there's always going to be something that's more powerful than something else.
And I just found a stat. It says at launch, there's over 200 possible character builds for people to go for, just to put it in perspective for people. Gavin, what about you? Is PvP something you're interested in? And
absolutely. What do you feel? I think more and more as time goes on, I like PvP. I like world PvP a little more, but you know, I'm good with Battlegrounds as well. What I'm hoping is that with the so many different combinations, that what they do is play to each character's strengths more so than necessarily make this is strong, this is weaker, but that each different archetype has its strength, and you can use those to adapt to your playstyle depending on your build. So necessarily, you know, the tank may be the best at taking damage and in the front, but in the front is where they belong, so they should be the best at it there. And the ranger should be, you know, shouldn't be the person who can survive three guys attacking him at once, but, you know, when he's off alone and snipes somebody, you know, watch out, because that he'll kill you. I like that kind of rock, paper, scissors system in group PvP. I think it works great for Battlegrounds. Individually,
right. I don't think
is
they
where
have...
the complaints come from, because in running around the world, people don't like getting losing. And when they run into the you know, the paper to their rock, it sucks. You're going to die.
And my understanding here, too, is that there's no – this is not an eSport. There is no arena-style gameplay here. So it sounds like when they do try to balance, it's going to be based around that group-style gameplay.
Yeah, and here's the other thing. If you don't want to get ganked, don't play on a PvP server.
Yeah.
Right on.
No, that's my biggest complaint in PvP games, though, is like – you know, I know that, like I said, we're still talking about balance, but when it comes to the whole, oh, I can't stand it because they're more powerful than me and they gank me, well, then don't play on a PvP server. You're going to get ganked.
Well, you got to keep in mind the demographic we're talking about here. We want our cake and we want to eat it too. I want to be on a PvP server. I don't want to get ganked, but I want to kill everything. So,
yeah.
Of course, you're going to always have whiners.
Oh, I know that. I'm just saying in general, because people say, oh, this class is overpowered or whatever. Like, well, yes, a ranger 20 levels higher than you comes and one-shots you. Yeah, that's going to happen.
Well, you know, and my thing here, too, is that I think balancing PvP is such a difficult thing that they should try to do it to a degree, but that people should never really expect it to be balanced. I mean, if you're going for group gameplay, that's something that each class should have some kind of counter. And with the diversity of the abilities that we feel like the brand of the table, I think that's certainly possible. But for people to go in and expect this to be, all right, I'm going to be able to face any single player, I think that's just kind of ludicrous to think, because that takes gear out of the equation. And that, how boring is it, too, if every class has an exact mirror? And it seems like that's what they're going against here, is, you know, individuality.
Yeah, and look at the Warcraft model. I mean, they just recently gave rogues a combo point-based heal. And it's homogenizing all of the classes together. So now playing a DPS is not really much that different from PvPing with a Shadow Priest or something like that. It's making everything so similar that there's really no point in stressing over what you're playing in the end. I mean, you're going to be able to do most everything. And I think that
is good and bad.
Mistake.
I think it's good and bad. I agree it's a mistake, because it's almost making every class the same and there's no individuality. But from Blizzard's standpoint, with the 12 million whiners, you know, they're like, right. fine, you know what, everybody's the same, so stop complaining about class balance.
Well, and the most important thing, I think, as well, isn't necessarily that every class has its counter. I think what's most important is that they develop the game modes and the maps in such a way that it's exciting to actually play through. You know what I mean? You can have a capture the flag match where people don't really have to be balanced at all to play a good match to capture the flag, or cap the flags at Arathi Basin in World of Warcraft. Mm-hmm. Balance matters to a degree, but what makes that more fun is the actual style of gameplay and the objectives. And in that way, I think there's potential for it to have very fun PvP without necessarily falling into those traps that Warcraft has over the years.
Yeah. I think as long as they stay out of an arena-based system, it's not really going to matter in the long run anyway.
Oh, yes. Please don't make an MMO in eSport. Why Blizzard ever thought that was a good idea, I don't understand.
Well, the thing is that you got to give them credit. They do still have Battlegrounds and they're encouraging world PvP too on those servers. So having the arena system is maybe not what we like to partake in, but it's a great outlet for those people who love that type of competition. And we don't have to participate in it.
Right, but I would have to ask, so do you think all the homogenization would have happened without arenas?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so either, because people wouldn't have noticed the difference that much. Would there be like Death Knights when they first came out need to be toned down a little? Yes, just because, I mean, they would just walk through and take out a whole team when they first came out. You know, that's a pretty obvious thing when you go to capture a flag and one guy takes out your whole team. But for the most part,
that's a class balance issue. That's not homogenization. There's something broken if you're taking out a whole team as one class.
Well, and that's what I mean. That was, you know, obviously that was fixed right away. And I mean, but yeah, stuff like that would still be fixed. But the whole constantly trying to balance classes, or just in the end making them all the same, that would never have happened.
Balance, I think, balance, I think, is the precursor to homogenization. And that's where I think it comes from, is that when you're playing in Arena, you have to know your class, but you also benefit from knowing everything about the other classes. And I see what Jeremy's saying there, that it brings it to the forefront when you have to know that, oh, wow, well, this warlock has this ability that's, like, way better than anything my mage has. Like, that really draws it to the front, and then the 12 million whiners go up and get upset and, you know.
And I think that I'll agree with you on the case from this point of view, that I think that the reason that they are homogenizing classes with arenas is not because people's complaints about one skill being powerful, but because people are forming teams based off of those skills, and other classes are not getting a chance to participate because no one wants anything but these things.
It's like,
so
the five
homogenization is allowing more players to play in arenas. Yeah.
Well, it was like that five elemental shaman guy, the one who had the five box set up and was winning all the arena stuff, and he was one guy playing five characters, and what he would do is just go in and target, hit like a lightning bolt and kill the one person. Hit a lightning bolt, kill the next person. Hit a lightning bolt, kill the next person. Mm-hmm. You know, right. And that was it. And yeah, like that's where that comes in too. Whereas if they make everybody the same, it doesn't matter what five classes you're playing. It's all going to be equal. But that also makes less individuality in the game. And that's where I think Rift is going to stand out, to where everybody's individual and like over 200 just class combinations. Well, that if you put that together with the different talents, that's would probably over 1 million different combinations of talents you could have.
Yeah, and you know, and if you look at their the skill charts that have been released, like the skill trees that you can customize and stuff now, they have that system where as you go into a tree, you get skills, like not just ones that you put talent points in, but the number of talent points I think that go into a tree give you other skills. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
So not only is like specking into a certain type giving you, you know, the talents, but it's also giving you a slew of unique individual skills based off of those talents. Yeah. So
absolutely. And with that, guys, let's leave the PvP topic behind and we'll move into our wrap up section of the show. Before we leave Rift in the past, let's just go around, give final thoughts on the game. Jeremy, we'll go to you first.
Final thoughts on the game. Let's see. First of all, I really am looking forward to it and being able to, you know, get more information to talk about or write about. But for the most part, I definitely see this as when it launches. And this is not a game I was even looking at even remotely before a couple weeks ago. And it's funny because I did not know with all the MMOs I read that until then that this was Scott Hartzman's game. Mm-hmm. And if you want to talk about a guy who's really respected in the gaming world, or specifically the MMO gaming world, Scott Hartzman's a name you can, you know, that will definitely come up. And I think that they chose the right guy to be the senior producer on this. And I really think that, and then they have people from Blizzard, they have people from Sony, they have one heck of a team. And I didn't even realize that these were the people working on this game literally until, you know, maybe 2-3 weeks ago. Because I obviously I've heard of Trion Worlds and I've heard of Rift Plains of Tolera, Heroes of Tolera, you know, everything that it was called before. And it's like, I'm like, oh, whatever, it's just another MMO. But now that I've been reading about this, I've gotten into the lore, and I've seen some of the names on the team behind this. Russ Brown, is it? One of the other guys, Russ, whatever, is it, Russ something. I believe he used to work at Blizzard, and he's like the head honcho guy. So this is going to be a game that's going to, it will definitely solidify its place in the MMO world.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there hasn't been a lot of just to add really quick, there hasn't been a lot of complaints from all the blogs and stuff I've been reading. It's mostly people looking forward to this game, not, you know, most of the time you hear about people already, once beta starts, there's all this stuff out there about bashing it. But everybody's really respecting the NDA of this game, and everybody who has talked about it says, I'm really looking forward to being able to talk about this. And it's like,
yeah, isn't that a cool sign? Like, when a game goes really bad, you have people breaking the NDA to say, oh, this sucks, because they don't care about being in the beta. But you have a lot of people that care about being in the beta, and that says a lot about it. All right, Gavin, we'll throw it to you. What are your final thoughts on Rift?
I think most impressive to me is the ideas of the lore. I wouldn't say that I'm a read-every-quest type of guy, but from what I've read from this kind of stuff that they're releasing, is it looks like a very interesting combination of a lot of different elements, and it's exciting. And I think what has me maybe at a more optimistic view on it is the fact that I'm not going into it with an expectation that this is going to change the gaming world. I expect it to be a solid, good, okay game. And if they can deliver that, you know, I'll be subscribing. So hopefully that's the case. If you're expecting it to save you and destroy World of Warcraft, I'm pretty sure that you're not going to be happy with any game for the rest of your life. Yeah. You should find it.
Let me just say this now that you brought that up. There will never be a WoW killer. There will never be a WoW killer. WoW is the weird, you know, crazy step uncle of the MMO world. Okay,
dude,
it is the two-ton gorilla in the corner. It is a fluke.
It's the uncle you don't want to be alone with because you'll disappear for the next couple years.
Right?
I got three words to that comment: Harry Potter Online.
Oh,
that, you know what?
I can't wait.
I don't know, because I think it would have. I think it would get a few. I mean, if there really was a Harry Potter Online, I think it would get a few Warcraft subscribers, but it doesn't aim at the same audience.
No, it's not necessarily aiming at the same audience, but it's aiming at an audience that is worldwide and huge. I mean, think of all the people who love Harry Potter. And I guarantee you there are more people familiar with Harry Potter than there are Warcraft.
And let me just make this comment. There's been lots of speculation the past couple years that Turbine's unnamed MMO
is Harry Potter Online.
Harry Potter.
And then,
I can't
then
wait.
The fact that they were picked up by Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I mean, you have to think about that. All of a sudden, Warner Brothers buys Turbine. Where did that come from? So, I mean, yeah, no, I've heard that too. And I mean, obviously that's speculation, but I wouldn't doubt that. Because they've already announced they have an MMO in the works.
It has to do well, though. Like, it has to be solid. I mean, if it was a WoW clone in the Harry Potter world, it would destroy it.
I have faith. I would love to see that game come from Turbine, because they make such polished games. I mean, really,
that,
I would love
and
to
no
see
matter
that.
What they've done, I mean, yeah, they've had a couple hiccups with their cash drops, but they're a very respected studio in the MMO world, and I think that's why they would be a good one to put it out.
Amen. And for my final thoughts on Rift, it can really echo Gavin. I'm not expecting this game to come out and be a WoW killer. I'm not expecting it to be the answer to all gaming. But as long as it is a good, polished, fun game, and all reports I've heard have said that it is building up to be exactly that, I'll be happy. And that, I mean, it's a video game. That's all it needs to be, is fun. And people will play it. If it can deliver that, that's great. And about the familiarity thing, just in answer to people that are concerned about that, honestly, over this last year, we've heard so much about the fourth pillar and how Guild Wars 2 is going to reshape things. It's nice to see a game come out and say that they're taking an incremental step. They're not going to go and leap to the next generation. They're going to take what works and...
You need to watch the latest video.
Oh, no, I did watch that. Yeah, well, that last video aside.
A term used in that video.
Yeah, pushing it into the next generation. I agree. That was market speak, but in the realistic side of things, I think they can be familiar and also push things forward, and that's good. You know, I don't want the wheel reinvented with this one. I want a good, fun game. That will be what keeps me, instead of hit or miss attempts at re-envisioning things that worked in the first place. Not to say that's going to be Tor or Guild Wars, but that is definitely the concern when you're reinventing major systems the way that they're going to try to. But best of luck to them, too.
Yeah. I'm just in the mood for something that's solid and okay. Just give me something decent. Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. One of the things I look forward to with this game, they're not coming out and saying, oh, we're going to be the WoW killer. They're not coming out and saying, oh, this game is completely different from everything you've seen. They're coming out and saying, this is our game. Come check it out. And, you know, form your own opinion. We have these cool systems. You can customize your classes, blah, 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 blah. But this is our game. And they're not claiming anything beyond that. They're not trying to be all big-headed and pull a Mark Jacobs and say, if we don't hit, you know, over a million subscribers, this game has failed, or anything like that.
And I would just like to point out that they have the three big things any MMO needs. They have elves, they have mailboxes, and they have a slash dance. Come on, guys. Come on. All right, let's move on. If you stuck with us through all this Rift conversation, then you are here for your beta key. We are giving away 5 VIP beta keys that will give you access to every beta event they have. We are giving those away through Vagary TV, our proud host, and Vagary is, well,
Vagary.tv.
Vagary.tv. Vagary's done great. And as Jeremy said, you know, we're really growing, we're building these relationships, and we have to thank Tryon because they hooked us up with one of these keys to give out to you guys today. So they're behind us, and we are going to give you the chance to win one. All you have to do is visit us at our new Vagary subsite, riftwatchers.com, click on the contest post and leave a comment. We will put a link in the show notes at every place the show gets hosted so you'll know where to go, but leave a comment. You'll be entered to win one of 5 VIP beta keys, and one lucky winner is also going to get a Perpetuum free month as well. So again, that's riftwatchers.com. Jeremy, what are we going to be doing over at this Rift Watchers place, and why should people care?
Well, what we're going to be doing is basically mostly news and opinions at first as we go on, and at the same time, hopefully by the time the game launches, we will have a few guides ready for everybody right at launch, to whether it be class guides for healers, tanks, whatever, or leveling guides, or just crafting guides, anything we can come up with that piques our interest that we'd be willing to write about. And obviously we're always looking for community feedback. What would you guys like to see? So we will go with that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And we are going with a format where we're going to try to give you guys exactly what you're looking for on day one. And that means guides. I know from, you know, my experience in blogging, people want guides. So we're going to go out there. We're going to get these things. We have ideas for a Rift podcast as well. So stay tuned. But at its heart, it is just going to be a Rift fan blog. So if you like what we've written in the past, and you like what we do here on this show, we would really appreciate it if you add us to your feed readers, and we'll keep you posted in all of our Rift doings and the news breakdowns and everything we plan on giving you. So again, that's riftwatchers.com, a product of Vagary.tv. So thank you to Vagary, and thank you to Tryon for helping us out there. And guys, check it out. While we are going through over that, Gavin did have to go, so we just want to thank Gavin very much for being on the show today. We always love having him. And you can check him out at PCGamer.com and FlexYourGeek.com. With that, let's get into the shout-out section. Jeremy, who would you like to shout-out to today?
Oh, you caught me off guard.
I can go first if you want to.
Okay, you can go first.
Okay. I would like to give a shout-out to, well, first and foremost, Adam Farrell, our co-host, because he hasn't been on in a while. Guys, he is really one of the most dedicated co-hosts you could hope to have on a show like this. Last week, he was going to get up at 5 a.m. over in Germany after working the whole night before just to be on this show with us. But I've been trying to get him to take a little bit of a break. So just shout-out to him. Wish him well. And shout-outs to, let's say, Tina at Tryon, because seriously, she's done very much for us. We're going to be in contact, and hopefully we can get her and some of the other Tryon devs on the Rift podcast or on this podcast in the future. So thank you to those guys. And that's it for me, Jeremy. Had enough time?
Yeah. I'll echo, first off, your shout-outs to the Tryon Worlds team and Tina in general for getting us that stuff, because that is awesome. A shout out to the PR rep at is it Avatar Creations? Are they the ones who made Perpetuum?
Yep.
I cannot remember her name right now. It is it's very Eastern European because that's where they're at. But for giving us some Perpetuum codes to give out, like Chris said, somebody who enters the Rift contest will get one of those. I've got a couple more that I'll be giving out on the Vagary.tv Twitter feed. So if you are on Twitter, follow Vagary TV, all one word, Vagary TV, and I'll be giving out a couple on there as well for Perpetuum. And then finally, just like to give a shout out to the whole Vagary writing staff as a whole, and that they've just been doing an awesome, awesome job with reviews, editorials, and anything else going on over at Vagary. So, awesome job, guys.
All right, and with that, that will make episode 33 for the show. Jeremy, how can they get in touch with you, and where can they find you when you're not busily herding the writers over at Vagary?
Well, if you can find me at the MMO Voices podcast, if you're interested there, or MMOvoices.com. If you have anything or want to send anything to do with that podcast or website, you can send it to MMOvoices@gmail.com. Otherwise, you can email me if you have anything personally you want to talk about, or if you're interested in writing for Vagary, jeremy.goodson, G-O-O-D-S-O-N, @vagary.tv. That is my email address there. And also, follow me on Twitter @_JWGoodson.
All right, awesome. And you can contact the Multiverse at multiversepodcast@gmail.com, or follow me at gamebynight.com. Although I need to use that more. I'm getting a new phone, so I'll actually be active on Twitter more than just a few times a week, guys. So stay tuned on that.
iPhone
and
4?
Feral, Droid X. Dude, it's $50 from the Dell Mobility Store. Yeah, a little fun fact for everybody that wants a phone. The Verizon store is so freaking expensive. You can find phones way cheaper by going through Dell. $50. And if you want to start a new contract, $10. And Verizon, they want $170.
Well, Amazon was doing any Droid you wanted for a penny with a 2-year contract.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, you didn't hear about that? I don't know if they're still doing it, but a couple weeks ago they did a any Droid. You can choose your Droid, so even the newest one, a penny, if you signed a 2-year contract.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to have to look at that. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's episode 33 of the Multiverse. I thank you very much for listening, and remember, enter that contest at riftwatchers.com. So with that, that's all. Bye, Jeremy.
Bye, Chris.
See you later, everybody.